Okay, let me start by simply describing the motivation of my work. I'm not originally from the forensics department. I'm just trying to reverse engineer data on transportation cards. So what we have in Luxembourg is a very simple transportation card. It's called the Eco Card, and it's my fare card. So we know that it can be easily hacked. We wanted to understand how vulnerable this card is in practical situations. So what we did, we started with reverse engineering the data. For that, we only needed, a dedicated PhD student. And Ton, my co-author, is my dedicated PhD student. He spent nights on that. He needs to be fed with beer, that's clear. And during all these nights, we had this kind of projections on the wall. And together, we tried to understand the meaning of these bits, so these dumps of these memory cards. And it took a lot of time and a lot of conjecturing, a lot of beer, and suggesting maybe that's a nice place where we can find the rights that are left on the card. Not sure about that. That's my second co-author, Sasha Radomirovic. So after a lot of time, we decided to look in literature. Maybe there's some solution to finding out where all these data can be found on the chip. And then we found the carving tools from digital forensics. But to our surprise, these carving tools are in fact not applicable in our situation, since our situation is a bit different. So we have a lot of dumps from a lot of cards. And every dump, we have some information about, for example, how many trips are left, or what is the identity of the card, when is the type of swiping the card. This gives some extra structure to the problem that we can use to efficiently determine how the card is built up. So this was our next step. Don't look at existing tools. They are too coarse for our specific problem in hand. First step is then to define the research question to make a most general approach. So the very vague research question was, we have a lot of dumps, a lot of attributes, and we want to find these back in the binary structure. And in order to simplify our lives, we had some very strong assumptions, but in the case of the ego card, these assumptions were quite justified. And for example, all dumps have the same length, and that's quite clear. If you have one type of card, all dumps are equivalent in length. Furthermore, we assumed that the attributes are always stored at the same location in the card, and in fact this turned out to be not true. But we were able to relax this requirement and find these attributes. And the third requirement is quite strong, namely that an attribute is encoded in a deterministic and injective way, where deterministic means that you always have the same encoding, the same bit string representing a given value, which is quite realistic if you don't apply hashing or crypto. And injectivity means that if you have two different values, that you get a binary string that's also different in at least one bit. And these are the assumptions that we started with. Because we wanted to precisely define the problem, we started with a very simple set of definitions. And in fact, the definitions of the problem fit in one slide. I just need some simple notation. So we have a notion of an attribute set. A is the set of attributes. B is the set of bits, so 0 and 1. B to the power n is the set of all strings, bit strings of length n. And in fact, a dump is considered as a bit string of length n. We have a set of dumps, and we want to identify the places in the string where you find some attributes. So you have to project a dump onto certain spaces. So you have to restrict yourself. You have to be able to restrict the dump to the set I. We want to know the value of some attribute, how many writes are still left on that card. So there's the value function. And then we have the encoding function, which takes a value and represents that as a binary string. For example, 5 is represented in the standard way 0101. Well, given this simple setting, we can define the notion of an attribute mapping. So an attribute mapping then assigns to every attribute, say, a set of locations in the bit string where this attribute can be found. And that's easily defined here at the bottom. If we restrict the dump s to the output of this function f, this attribute mapping, for a certain attribute a, then we find the encoding e of the value of the attribute for this set s. And using this, we can formalize the research question very precisely. So now the question is, can we find, given a set of dumps and a set of attribute values, can we find such a function f? And or maybe one or all functions, that's how you formulate this. And once we have this, we can start formulating algorithms, heuristics, and tools, etc. Okay, let's look at a very simple example, just to make it precise what we're looking at. So assume we have 5 dumps here. Here this is a string, that's the first dump, this is the second dump, etc. We have a very short dump in this example, what is it, 20 bits or so. Assume we are looking for the right left attribute in this dump, and we have, in some way, we have knowledge, external knowledge, that in this dump the right left value is 4, here it's 4 as well, then we have one with 5, 6, and 6. Now the question is which bits represent the bytes, right left, and that in principle with such a small system you can do it by hand and then you can find, for example, these places where the right left can be stored. I say can be since you have no evidence of that, of course. For example, these 4 bits correspond to the binary representation of 4. And here we see the same 4 bits. Here we see 5. Here we see 6 binary, and here 6 as well binary. But it occurs in 2 places. You never know which of the 2 it could be. But here we have used the standard encoding of integers. But what happens if you use a non-standard encoding like this one? And again, you see that we have the value for 4 at these places, the value for 5 here, and the value for 6 we have at that place. And the idea that you see is that you don't want to try every possible encoding, since you cannot be sure which encoding in advance the company has been using. So you must find a method that is independent of the encoding. And what you can do is to see the characteristic of this, namely that these 4 bits should be equal for this dump and for this dump. But there should be at least 1 bit difference between these 2 dumps and at least one bit difference between these 2 dumps. Well, and that's in principle the idea behind the algorithmics that we have developed. In fact, we have looked at the commonalities, so that's the places where 2 dumps are equal, and the dissimilarities, and that's the places where 2 dumps are not equal. And this is the method that we can use to infer the possible attribute mappings. Let's look at the commonalities first. So in order to talk about the commonalities, you have to group your set of dumps into dumps that have the same value. So in fact, what you do, you partition your dumps into a set of bundles. So each bundle contains all dumps that have the same, exactly the same value for some given attribute. And once you have a bundle, you can define the set of all bits that should be in common. Namely, for each bundle, you look at those sub-intervals where for all dumps in that bundle, the ith bit of that dump is equal. So this is for one bundle, and then you have to take the intersection for all bundles. Well, let's look at a very simple example again to make it precise. So we have, say, distributed the five dumps into three categories, three bundles. One and two have the same rights-left value of four. Then what we are looking at is the values where they are agreeing. So for example, here 0 and 0 are the same, but 0 and 1 are not the same. So we get this list of stars for each of the bundles, and what you do, in fact, you take the exclusive or the negation of that, of course. And then if you do it for every bundle, you combine all these information, and then by taking, say, the conjunction of these start fields, you get the common set. What's the interpretation of the common set? It means that if you find this rights-left attribute somewhere in this string, then it must be within the start section. You cannot have any of these dotted elements in your rights-left attribute, because then your attribute encoding would not have been deterministic. This is a very simple algorithm, exclusive OR, say over all bundles in general, meaning that you have complexity linear in the size of your dumps. Well, second step is the dissimilarities. It's a bit more complicated. Commonality set is a set of indexes. The dissimilarity set is a set of indexes. So here you determine those indexes where if the value of the two dumps are different, then there must be at least one index element where these bits are indeed different. Let's look at the example again to make that clear. So what we do, we run through the dumps from left to right. And what we see is that if we take the first two bits, then we have a hit, meaning that every dump differs in at least one element, one bit in the first two bits. So here we have a 0 and a 1, we have 1 and 0, and these 4 and 6 differ at the second place. So you do it from left to right. So from position 2, you find that you need 3 bits at least to have a difference between all three bundles that we look at. Well, and you can continue this. Then you have a set of stars. And each such a star means that you at least have to comprise a starred region in order to find this attribute. The complexity of this algorithm is a bit more awkward. It's quadratic, since you have to go through the whole, bundle twice in principle. Quadratic in the size of the dumps, but it's still fair. And then the main result is here. It's a kind of enclosure result, namely that if you're looking for this attribute mapping function f, then you have an upper bound given by common, and you have a lower bound given by a set in the dissimilarity set. And this is quite a standard trivial result, but in fact it shows later that it's very strong. These bounds are quite narrow if you apply them to a sufficient number of dumps. And that's already a surprise. This is we didn't need any heuristics to narrow this even further. Just to come back to the example, if we apply this to the example, and for ease of reasoning, let's assume we have an encoding of 4 bits, then we already have found these positions that I showed you, that I found by hand in the first slides, and we found one more position that's here. These 4 bits can also be used to represent the rights left. Okay, so this is the more or less the theory. We decided to apply this this work to work this theory out in a tool and apply the tool to the ego card. That was our first goal of our research. What I did, in fact, I spent last Christmas holidays in the bus. I bought 7 cards and I made a lot of trips in the bus. I asked my wife to join me, and for each trip, I dumped the contents of the card, and I made note of all kinds of information that that I could take from the environment. For what, how many rides are still left, the bus number, the bus stop, the time of swiping, the date of swiping. I even took the license plate of the bus. That had a reason, since I wanted to know if the reader was represented on the ego card, and the readers, there are 4 or 5 readers in every bus, and there's no visible, no information on the reader about the number of the readers. So I looked at it from all sides, but they are identityless. So what I decided, I write down the license plate of the bus and the position in the bus of the reader, hoping that that would identify the reader uniquely. And as you must understand now, if you're looking for the reader identity, there's no reason to know the reader identity with this method. You only need to know something that's isomorphic to the reader identity. So the combination of license plate and location in the bus is sufficient to find reader identities, of course. Okay, then we applied our tools. I had some fights with my wife because she forgot to write down the license plate several times. But that was a nice Christmas for me. And then the tools, in fact, the tools were developed in parallel to doing the experiments. But in the end, of course, we could redo the full experiment with the most recent version of the tool, and this is what came out. This is the application of the common algorithm, say. And what it displays is that we have, there's one kbyte of data on each card. What you clearly see is that there are sectors. This is a sector, this is a sector. We see 16 sectors in total. Every line is 128 bits, so every little box is a bit. You can see that, it's a bit, for example. A sector is 4 lines, and that's what you immediately see from this picture. Then if you look a bit more detailed, you see that there are 4 types of sectors. This is a special sector. Then we have a number of sectors here, 7 sectors. We have 5 sectors which are similar here, and we have 3 empty sectors. And how do you read it? Well, dark blue means that for all dumps that I had, the value of that bit was systematically 1. Light blue, it was systematically 0. Red means it was not consistent over the dumps. And the red parts are in fact the parts that are interesting that you want to understand, since that's what the information is on the dumps. We gave these sectors a name according to our interpretation of their function. The shell sector is a sector that contains meter information and contains the directory structure of this card. The product sectors contain information over the number of products that you have on a card. According to the guidelines, you can store 6 products on a card. To my surprise, there were 7 product sectors. And then we have transaction sectors. Every time that you swipe your card or charge your card, there's a new transaction added. And it turns out that the transaction sectors were written to in a round-robin phase order, 1 by 1, and then at the end cyclic back to the beginning, and these we ignored. What you further see is that the 4th line of each sector is identical, and if you go to the standard of this kind of cards, you see that the 4th line is intended to be the cryptographic key, meaning that every sector on every card had the same cryptographic key. The displayed key is not the one that's on the cards. I changed it just to not give some secret information away. They could have done a better job designing that, of course. The product sectors, I looked at it in detail. And what you see is that there are three product sectors here and one here that have a similar density of red dots. And there are three that have a smaller density. And my interpretation is that mostly you have just a few products, and that's what happens here. And only seldomly you will find modifications to these products because they are not always loaded. Normally I used two, three, or one time five products at one card. Where this goes in a round-robin fashion, you see that this is not so written to in a round-robin fashion. There's one active product, and it alternates, the writing on this active product alternates between the active product sector and one special sector in the end. And that's why it has seven product sectors. There's a lot of redundancy. It's written to this one. Next wipe, it's written to this one. And the reason is, of course, if there's a write failure, an interaction failure, then you still have the previous state on board. And that's my interpretation. They want to build a lot of safety in that. So I will look quickly into the details of these sectors just to see what our tools brought to us. First of all, we looked for the card ID. The card ID is written on the card as an integer. I think it's 10 digits or so. If you carve that with the tools, you have two occurrences. The first, 32 bits, and then a section of 8 bits. The first 32 bits are, according to the standards, is indeed the card ID, and the second turns out to be a checksum over the card ID. The card ID was not easily interpreted as an integer. What they did, they interpreted as bytes, and then they reversed the bytes and then transformed it to integers. That's what I found later. Then what you see here is a special feature of the tool. It turns out that the tool is very capable of indicating high entropy sections, and that indeed relates to cryptographic hashes and to checksums. So that's how we found out that this must be probably a cryptographic hash. It must be a keyed hash. We have not been able to reverse engineer this, but we have been able to reverse engineer the checksum again. We exactly know what it is. And here we see some pointers, which is the internal directory structure of the card. For example, the TSEC pointer means which is the next transaction sector that we are going to write to in the next swipe. And the same structure, but more complicated, holds for the product sector pointer, where we have this alternating behavior between the A and the B sector. Then we go to the product sector. What we found was a small space where the card type is stored. We found two hits for the right's left attribute, to my surprise. This attribute is simply the right's left that you have, but this turned out to be 12 minus the right's left, and I don't have a clue why they have this duplication with this strange value. Expiration time, number of minutes since midnight, and again a checksum. Transaction sector, we found a date, number of days since 1997, a time, an identical date here, and a time which is different from that time, which is strongly related to the time. And further, we found the hit of the reader ID, but to my surprise, it was not the license plate plus location in the bus, it was just license plate. And I realized that it means that all readers in a bus exactly have the same reader ID. Even worse, I found two buses with the same reader ID, so they have made a mistake while administering their readers. But I didn't dare telling that to these guys. Finally, what we did, we defined this carving problem. We made it precise by setting up some theory analysis. We developed algorithms which are pretty straightforward, but which are optimized in several ways. For the ego cards, we did find the attributes we were looking for. We did not find attributes like bus number or bus stop, and that's because they are not on the card. In fact, in this system, Luxembourg is a very small country. You can travel for 2 hours through the whole country with one swipe. So it is not on the card in which bus you are. Performance is quite good, but we have experimented with improving the performance a factor of 1,000 by re-encoding it in C. This was a very small, simple Python implementation. Convergence is very interesting. Theoretical observations clearly made a statement that you need 10 bundles, maybe 12, to find an attribute. And that's what we found out in the ego card. You only need 10 bundles and you have found your attribute. And we are still working on the tool and ideas to improve. If you want to play with it, feel free to download it. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much. This was a fascinating way of abstracting away from the problem. I really liked it. If I understand correctly, when you look for the commonality, then your fields can be, a field can be anywhere, even spread out, whereas when you look for the dissimilarities, the bits have to be next to each other. Is this right?
Well, in fact, the whole theory is independent of the fact if they are consecutive or not, the bits. That's just because in my explanation I use consecutive bits, but it's independent of the order.
So it was just a feature of your example,
but also for the tools. If you want to make algorithms of non-contiguous parts of the memory, then you will have to work harder. That's quite.
You mean higher,
I think,
complexity.
The complexity will grow.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
So this seems like a great way of sort of visualizing information, honing down on very specific parts of it. Can you think of other applications besides just these cards to look at? And what sort of knowledge do you need to know about those cards before you're starting to do this sort of reverse engineering?
Yeah, so in principle, what you only need to know is that you have contextual information about what's represented in the bit stream. So what we are going to experiment with, and that's already stated here, is protocol reverse engineering. You don't need to make a memory dump. You can also inspect the communication between two agents and see if their structure, like the nonce that you can predict, or the time of day when the message was sent, or so. So this is one of the hot topics, of course, in security protocols. To give the messages of protocol, try to re-engineer what the protocol in fact does. And I think this tool will help you with that.
Thank you. Thanks, speaker again.